Hey, Bob WP here, and welcome to WordPress Event Talk, a Do The Woo podcast show. This episode is brought to you by Weglot, the WordPress multilingual plugin that makes translating your WooCommerce store breathe. Available through WooCommerce extensions, Weglot offers a simple no-code integration that lets you add new languages in minutes. Say goodbye to complex add-ons and manual translations. Weglot seamlessly manages translations and displays them under language-specific subdirectories so you can serve multiple markets without the hassle of multiple stores. It's a huge time saver and resource saver for anyone looking to expand their client store's reach globally. Today, we are sharing with you the second Do The Woo End of the Day recap for day two of Woo Sesh, a virtual conference for WooCommerce store builders designed to help grow their businesses. In our recap, again, we find host and founder of Woo Sesh, Brian Richards, as he hands over the mics to our hosts, Robbie Adair and Marcus Burnett. From there, listen in as they revisit the sessions of the day and highlight some of the notable takeaways from them, as well as giving their own insights on the topics. So let's join in.
I love that we had a presentation about motion design because I don't feel like we get to see that very often.
Exactly. Me too. That's why I was like, I was really surprised actually. I saw it on the schedule because you're right. A lot of times, especially if you're at conferences with a lot of developers, and developers are pretty much like, why do you need that? It's going to slow everything down. No, you know, and it's like, well, you know, you've got to think about the flip side, right? You've got to think about the marketing side of your website. And, you know, can you have a massive e-commerce site and have beautiful animations? Well, I think Apple.com has proven that time and time again, that this is doable. And so I think it just lends to the experience. I was glad that he was showing a way, though, to highly optimize those so that it didn't impact the page load speed as much, because when you add 74 KB, I mean, it all adds up, we know,
yeah.
But you know, that's a pretty small little hit on the page. And so I thought it was really cool to see that. And, you know, he did admit there are times, no, this is not the
sure.
way to go. Yeah. And I think the way a lot of his examples wouldn't really impact your accessibility. A lot of his examples were those, you know, those little icons that were moving and they were smooth and they looked great and they scaled and all that, but they were not an essential part of the user's flow through to get to purchase. So
yeah,
I thought that that was cool.
It's real common, I think, and I've done it too, to have like a big hero video that kind of talks about, and those are huge. And we try to do the best we can to stream them and crunch them down to file size and all of that stuff. But at the end of the day, they become kind of essential to the site because they give you that first impression. They kind of set the tone for trust and the brand and all of that stuff. And then you get down to mobile phones and they don't autoplay, or they don't play that well, or they're taking up way too much bandwidth. So we end up replacing it with a photo, which doesn't have the same impact. And so finding ways to be able to like sprinkle those fun delight and, you know, surprise and delight animations throughout in a way that like enhances it, but doesn't necessarily provide the actual content that you have to see, that you need to see, I think is great. I don't know. Have you been able to do any of that? Or are you also like big hero video and otherwise kind of stayed away?
So when I started my agency 22 years ago, we started as a flash video shop. So video has been integral in my agency the entire time. Now, obviously, Flash was killed, but or at least for websites, it was killed.
Yeah.
So, you know, so of course we, you know, moved on HTML5 video, things like that. And then streaming from your S3 buckets, things like that. So we still incorporate a ton of video, but we are a little more methodical, I do believe, about how we put it in there because of speed and accessibility both. So like, for instance, yes, do we have the hero videos? People love those. We do have those. We've actually even, latest site we did, we even got it, small enough and streaming well enough. It actually does pretty well on mobile. But a lot of times we don't encourage that with the clients.
Yeah.
We kill it and go to a still shot. But then, you know, other video on the pages would maybe be part of the product description or things like that. So it's not as upfront. It's not the most integral part. We don't want to block our accessibility readers. We don't want to block the SEO of that page. And so still having it there because, I mean, I think if we've learned nothing from Amazon, it is video works. They put video in the product descriptions. They put video in the user comments. I mean, video is integral in selling those products. And so I think you still have to incorporate it. We have to think it through and make sure how is it impacting every single page that you put video on? How does it impact it? Particularly if it's a product page, because we don't want anything to slow them down from hitting, put it in my cart and buy it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I have limited experience with Lottie Files, but there's definitely some cool stuff that you can do there, especially with things that are more along the like raster graphics aesthetic, which is popular. So definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we'll start seeing some more of that. I mean, just like we have more SVGs for logos and icons on the site, I think we'll start seeing the JSON animations being more common out there. I mean, if Lottie's making an easy download for it, it's going to become more common. We're going to see more of that out there. Yeah. So Juan was next on the schedule, and he did Unlock Global Growth, Avoid These Common Pitfalls in E-commerce Localization, which I really appreciate the fact that he made fun of himself on how many times he was going to say localization, because did. I was like, if we were in a drinking game and we all had to take a shot every time he said localization, we wouldn't have made it to the recap. No way. But yeah, I mean, he had some very good points in there of localization. That's a very tricky thing. And I think that there are, pulling off a global e-commerce site with your localizations in there is a massive job. Massive. And he's right. It's not just, let me translate these pages. It becomes so much more when you start thinking about those, you know, especially your customizations that you're doing to the customer, the emails going to them. And now you have to start thinking about culturally, am I wording this so that I'm not offending anyone? I mean, he even talked about changing your colors. Yeah, you've got WP World. So what do you think about localization? I would think that this would be something that you would be like, oh, geez, uh-oh, I better think about this.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely a lot of food for thought there. I was going to say, if I had seen like maybe just the title on a multi-track conference, I might have, you know, gone to the other track or whatever. And that would have been such a huge mistake because there was so much good information in this that like I just never even thought about. So the WP World is currently just in English. I've done very little to do any kind of localization for it. But like just thinking through a lot of the things, and I didn't write the pitfalls down specifically, but it's so much more than just making the language the like native language for the location. Like you said, colors, I wrote some of them down. Photos, even your photography choices, right? Things that make sense in one country, one culture, don't necessarily translate the same intent, the same feeling across multiple idioms, like you said, common sayings and stuff. Mm-hmm. Measurements, I didn't even think about that. When I started thinking about like the store experience specifically, having metric measurements versus US imperial measurements. Same with currency, talking about like making sure that you have the right currency for the right location, the right payment options for those currencies in the right locations. And all of that has to come together. Even I made myself a little note, even the products offered, like you can offer everything to everyone. And that might, you know, that might be hard for conversion when you could make more optimized choices depending on the location. Like, you know, this set of products is going to sell best in this location. Just show that set of products. Don't get a whole bunch of other stuff in the way. Same goes for somewhere else. And so, like, I noted all of those different things. But if I'd seen, like I said, if I'd seen the event on the schedule, I'd been like, oh, they're going to talk. And it's, you know, a guy from Weglot, they're going to talk about having it, your site in a different language. That's, there's so much more to it than that. And I thought that that was the most interesting takeaway for me. Now I get to go back to the WP World and say, well, what needs to be in a different language? But what needs to be in a different color? What photos do I have going on here that make sense for us in the US that maybe don't make sense for someone outside of the US? I do have a few products. There's a WooCommerce store there. They're like, well, I say they're generally, you know, available for everyone, which they are, but I probably could do more things in the, you know, store wise that cater to folks outside the US a bit more. So living in the US, obviously a very US centric point of view, and everything has been built through that lens. And I definitely could do a better job of thinking through just that whole list of other things that I've never even thought of that is part of localization. It's not just translation.
My notes from it were, one, I was like, I need to write a blog post about which payment processors are available in which countries. I just think that would be really handy even for us to reference ourselves.
Like, yeah, no kidding.
I think that'll be one of my blog posts that I do on OS training coming up, because I was like, that would be a really interesting blog post just to kind of see. And I know it's a moving target, right? We have processors coming up and going down all the time, but I still think it could be a handy resource for people. And I was glad that he brought all the pitfalls. I know he couldn't squeeze it all into that session, but I would have liked to have also seen some action items. Okay, here's a pitfall and here's an action item to take care of that. I mean, even just, you know, he did mention, you know, you might have to do some custom CSS and things like that. But, you know, just the, how do you even, I know how to write CSS, but how do I determine my location switching for my...
Oh, yeah, right.
I think there are a couple of tools that are out there for WordPress in particular that do this, but I would have, I could have gone from that little session of him listing pitfalls to let's go into a workshop and you show me how to fix some of these pitfalls.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
You know, I was like, that would be really cool. And then we went from his into Femi's talk, where he talked about, let me get his title correctly, From Click to Cart, Ensuring an Accessible Customer Journey in WooCommerce. So again, accessibility, lots of people mention accessibility in there, but his was particularly all about accessibility, which I'm always interested. Anytime I see a talk about accessibility, you know, I mean, we all probably know our basics on accessibility, right? We need the alt tags. We need to use our hierarchy correctly with HTML tags and things like that. I think we know the basics. Of course, it doesn't hurt to hear them again ever. And because you'll hear them and you'll be like, you know, that site I just put up, did we even look at the alt tags? You know, let me go back and look at that. Those kind of things. So I feel like there was some basic information in that he gave, but then he gave a step further. I felt like I really enjoyed that talk, especially he showed an example of using Wave. I don't think he got to the other tool that he talked about, Axe, but showing that Wave tool, I was like, hey, that's pretty daggum awesome. I'm going to have to play around with that and just, you know, go test some sites and just see how the results fare on some of these other sites. But I really thought that was cool. And then him just, you know, taking that all the way. I liked his examples where he showed the reader and what the reader actually was reading off of those pages on there. I was like, wow. Yeah. I mean, if you close your eyes and you listen to that, yeah, you'd be like, totally like, well, I don't know if I want to click on this. It just says click it. You know, yeah. Or learn more, click. I'm like, learn more about what? And so I really did appreciate those little examples that he showed in there, because I was like, these are easy fixes that you just don't even think about until you see someone do it. And you're like, I should probably do that. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I didn't even put together the 5-minute break that we had in between. Was long enough for me to not even think about the fact that, like, these do pile on top of each other, right? So like, you have the localization, but then you need to make it accessible across multiple countries and stuff as well. And that really, really shows you just how much, you know, like how much thought and effort has to go into putting one of these stores together, but then how much greater of an experience, how much higher the convert, like there's all sorts of math and data, right? Behind the accessibility and localization, and all of that stuff, increasing conversion rates. The same thing, even like we talked about, should you use the motion design? Should you not use the motion design? But there were numbers associated with, like, you know, if you add this kind of stuff, people feel happier. They trust the brand more. That feels more professional and polished, and all of that drives trust in the brand, trust in the products, and drives conversions and all of that. I mean, again, this entire woo sesh, this entire event is about building stores that increase. I mean, at the end of the day, it's about increasing conversions, building stores that are accessible and fantastic. They look great. They perform well and all of that. We're all here because we want our stores to do well conversion wise. We want them to look nice and we want all that other stuff. But the end goal is conversions. And So like just thinking about the layers that each one of these talks adds to the store, that yes, it's another layer of like things that you need to think about, but it's another layer of things that can help increase conversions. And so I love that they kind of like stacked into each other that way.
Yeah. And Femi's numbers that he had in there too, by the way, about, you know, you were looking at worldwide, it was 16 or 18%. I can't remember that are need accessibility on websites to navigate them at all.
Yeah.
And it was like 95% of websites out there are not. And I was like, wow. So I kind of see that though as it, from the standpoint of your own website or your customers' websites, I would look at that as a, wow. So I just need to start working on this and I'm going to be better than 95% of the websites on the web, on the whole web.
So if I do just a little bit, I'll already be ahead of the competition, you know, sensibly. You're talking about other websites that are selling the same thing. Like, I just need to do a little bit of this and I'll be in a better place than most of the rest of the shops that I'm competing against.
Exactly. And when you start thinking about, well, you know, 16 or 18%, is that enough of a percentage there to make me do all of this? Even if you capture a portion of that, when you think about that is worldwide audience, 16 to 18%, that's a huge number. So even if you could capture another 3 or 4% than you are capturing already, you're going to increase your revenue pretty dramatically, actually. So I really enjoyed his talk a lot, just because he had some really good data points up front. I felt like I love numbers, as you can tell. So those stuck with me. And then he actually showed us how to do some things in there. And like I said, I really enjoyed him showing us that reader and then just kind of putting us in the seat of an accessible person trying to go through there. And yes, we all want to make our sites better. So we're going to make less clicks to get to the checkout, right? But you also have to think about less tabs and enters, because those people are using the keyboard to move around. And I didn't even think about when he showed that example where there were like multiple divs inside of there where he had to like tab 5 times just to get to the added to the cart. I was like, oh, wow. I mean, I didn't even think about that. So I really enjoyed his talk. I thought he had an excellent talk. And I know he also mentioned that he'll be putting something else up on his site. So I'll be going and checking out his website after this and just seeing what else he's going to put out there for us to see. Oh, the screen reader. He was going to show more examples of the screen reader, which is cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'll admit that I don't open the screen reader nearly often enough to see what's happening in there. And jumping down 5 divs to add a product to a cart is just silly. And of course, that's going to affect conversions. The faster you can, you know, the better experience, the easier you can make it for someone to add something to the cart and check out, obviously the better. So yeah, it's definitely something that needs to happen. Open up that screen reader, check out what's happening there, make sure that you're not putting things in the way that you don't even see, right? Because those divs, it's just 5 divs wrapped around each other. You don't even see anything on the screen.
That's right.
Unless you open that screen reader and let it read through that.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So yeah, no, great, great talk. And then after that, we had Michelle doing her customer success talk. Love it. She actually had added some things from WordCamp US. So I really enjoyed that. I loved her talk there too. And I was just like, yes, I am so guilty of saying thank you and I'm sorry in every other word. I almost, people ask me all the time, are you from Canada? That's how much I say I'm sorry.
Nice. They've got a reputation.
Yeah, I do. But I mean, I'm just Southern. And so we were raised to be polite or we get, you know, whacked on the back of the head. So, you know. It's instilled in me, but I really enjoyed her talk. And it was nice also, I feel like, because we had been so technical and talking about, you know, e-commerce flow and accessibility and all these things. So it was a nice refreshing break. I feel like mentally to then, let me just think about customer success. Let me think about customer treatment and things like that. And the messaging that I'm sending to customers as automated emails and things like that. It made me, after I heard it, I was like, yes, I need to go back through all of our automated emails and just check the verbiage on them. You know, multiple things made me think about that today. One, hers, I was like, yeah, I need to go look at my verbiage again. And then also just the localization thought. I was like, we have a lot of clients that sign up for OST from around the world. And I'm like, I need to make sure I didn't use any like colloquialism in that first email they get, that they're like,
some Texasisms.
Exactly. Some y'all, and they'll be like, what's y'all?
What's y'all?
Is this a new web language? I don't know. So yeah. But no, it was a very good soft skills talk. I really enjoyed it. And I think you know, again, you get in the mode of just building it and being very technical. And so it's nice to kind of step back and just think about, okay, let me think about this as a business owner to a customer and think about that part of it, because that's equally as important as it being a frictionless transaction, right? Is that it also needs to be a customer success. There needs to be pleasant to the customer as well.
Yeah, definitely brought the human element back in. It's been like brain mode is in settings and layouts and, you know, automating tasks and integrating plugins and all of that. And it was, it was nice. You, like you said, a little relief of like, oh, back to the human story, back to the human part of it. And yeah, going back and checking out the verbiage of things is always great. People know it's automated, but right. It should feel like, you know, a human wrote it into the automation system and not like,
exactly.
Yeah, we just hit a couple of letters on the keyboard and hit send or whatever. But yeah, the please and thank yous part, I do that a ton too. I'm not Southern, but I do live in the South, so I'm just used to it. I'm, you know, yes, ma'am, yes, sir, to the point where like I have to please, thank you, and I'm sorry, ChatGPT. I know it's not a person, but I still have to say thank you and please and sometimes even apologize. I'm sorry the last direction wasn't clear. Let me give you a better prompt.
I thought I was the only one that like said please to ChatGPT. Like every prompt I have says please. And I'm like,
always please.
I don't have to say please, but it's always so pleasant when it answers me. So I think, well, maybe I'm making ChatGPT happy.
I have a couple of times gone without saying please, and then I just felt bad afterwards. So I was like, oh, I really should have been more polite in that prompt to a machine.
I know.
Still, I felt bad afterwards.
That's funny. I do the same thing. Oh, my goodness. Then we went into Rodolfo's talk, which was lifetime only, a customer first approach to WooCommerce plugin. And I was like, I was listening to him because, you know, there's a huge debate out there, as we all know, about selling lifetime licenses or not, right? And most business owners out there will tell you, I tried it, I'm never doing it again, things like that. Or some are just like, I'll absolutely never offer a lifetime license. Now, I think what Rodolfo showed us, though, is a way that lifetime license can work. And like, if you're a dev and you want to start something on the side, like he was, with very tiny, tiny little plugins like that, so that your customer support is not too much, that he was showing a way that you actually could get away with the lifetime plugins. And it might let a developer, you know, start as part-time, start building his business up. And then I think if they got to the point where they were like, okay, I want to make this go as my main business, then at that point, I think they would start evaluating, do they want to also offer subscriptions as well as the lifetime license? I think at a certain point, they kind of have to, because like he said, he said in his talk that you can't value your business that way, because you know what you made last month, but that doesn't guarantee you're getting it this month or next year at this month, you know? And so I thought it was an interesting talk because he is very passionate, obviously, about he does not like subscriptions. And I got that wholeheartedly, but he's so being a person who's passionate about not liking them, he found a way to make lifetime subscriptions work and still make money at it. So I thought that was, it was interesting. He was very passionate about it, though, I will say.
Yeah, he took a very customer-first focus, like perspective on buying plugins, right? And yesterday, I was thinking back through the state of WooCommerce, the first talk yesterday, where they were talking about integrating some of the like must-haves, the things that are in any given WooCommerce store that maybe WooCommerce doesn't have right now, like adding shipping tracking information, for example. Like that one-off type thing is the sort of thing that I think Rodolfo was talking about as like a mini plugin. And WooCommerce is going to be doing more of that stuff, but it's definitely like, I get what they're trying to do in, you throw WooCommerce on your site, this supposed free plugin, and then all of a sudden you've got, you know, a whole bunch of plugins that you've got that you're on the hook for to make your site actually do a whole lot. And those come with recurring costs, generally yearly. I think WooCommerce has done some stuff to maybe have some monthly, but in any case, you're on the hook for paying for these plugins on a yearly basis to get updates, to get support and all of that. And I get where Rodolfo is coming from and trying to reduce some of that by saying, this is just a one-off cost. Like, you need this for your site. You need this for a handful of sites, right? You could download the plugin. You can put it on a handful of sites. There's not like a certain number of sites license that you're buying or anything like that. Put it on a few sites. It does the thing it's supposed to do, and you don't have to think about paying for that thing again. So, like, from a customer's standpoint, I 100% understand where he's coming from.
Yep.
From, like, the plugin developer standpoint, you have to, hopefully, if you're doing it full-time, know that you're going to have money coming in next month, the month after that, next year, like you were saying. And the support volume, I think, is the, like, big question mark there. He had numbers in the presentation that showed that his support volume was fairly low and all pretty much skewed to the beginning of, you know, of the purchase. Someone buys it, it either works or it doesn't. If it doesn't, figure out why, whether it's a problem with the plugin or a problem with the site or conflict or whatever. And then that's it. Then the plugin continues to do its thing forever and you don't have to worry about it. So he did have numbers that proved out, like, that it's working for him anyways. With these mini plugins, and I thought that was, it's an interesting take for sure. Again, I think as you maybe grow to build larger plugins, that's not going to work because I think the support burden becomes too large. But if you're, you know, one-off mini plugins like he's doing, I think it's an interesting model.
Yeah, no, I did. I thought it was interesting. More interesting to me too was that he said that a lot of the little mini plugins were other developers and he was just splitting cost with them on it, or splitting profits, excuse me, cost profits on that. but he's not marketing. And I was like, wow, these people will like, oh yes, you're all, yeah, I'll split that with you, even though you're not marketing it to make any money. I was like, wow. Okay. So I imagine though, they're going to go like, wait a minute. When they see us talk, they're going to be like, wait, you think we can make what per month if you just market? Let's talk about that.
Right.
You'll find some more partners there that were like, yeah, let me market you.
Exactly. I would say, or not just him marketing, but maybe that provides incentive for the other developers to go out and point people back to Business Bloomer and back to those plugins to say, you know, yeah, I built that with, you could buy it right here and we'll split it or whatever. I think that was interesting. Yeah, it's definitely interesting too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to, we've got two more talks that we're going to talk about here, but I'm going to ask Brian to come in and join us as well. And so we can all chat about those. We had the security and fraud prevention in payment. And I have to apologize because I was setting up my computer for the last half of it. So I didn't get to hear the end of it. So that's why we bring Brian in here, because Brian knows all.
I lived it. What do you want to know specifically? Would you like a resuscitation of everything that was said verbatim?
No.
Yeah, read the transcript.
Yeah. First,
he was getting pretty technical.
Yes. So he was talking about how to prevent payment fraud, and specifically talking about how payment fraud is happening in Japan and the efforts being made to reduce that. And for everyone not in the know about the major shifts that have happened for convenience pay setups in Japan, it's amazing. They have had a flurry of sort of like scan to pay options. Like, I've lost count, but I remember someone sharing stats and it was like 40 or 60. Wow. It was a staggering number of different companies providing convenient payment options at, you know, at convenience stores, at restaurants, like all over the place. There'd be different QR codes that you could scan and just pay and then go without having to, you know, pull out a credit card, pull out any real money. Dramatically reduced the friction in making and taking payments, which meant that it also dramatically increased the opportunity and surface area for fraud to occur. And I think he did a really great job in the beginning of the talk, sort of showing that this is a common trend, right? We come up with one form of currency and it makes it so much easier for trade to happen. And then people can steal it or lie or otherwise cheat the system. And so then we invent something which introduces a little bit more friction, but it reduces the fraud. And then fraud finds a new way in. So we invent another thing. And so it's this constant tug of war between, like, we want to make this as easy as possible for, you know, currency to change hands, while also making it as difficult as possible for bad actors to take advantage of everybody. That's a tough problem to solve.
It is. And we're starting to see that even in the U.S., by the way. I mean, I don't know if you guys have seen all the warnings, but you know how you pull up at the pump and gas up now and they've got a QR code. It's like, just scan to pay. There are a ton of bad actors that are going out there just put another sticker over that you don't even know, and you're just sending them money. It's a problem. Even here, it's a problem. So yeah, I could see that. At the very beginning, he was like talking about how used to you had to go and like it went to, you had to like basically go over to Visa and do the approval thing, remember, and come back to the site. And it was I remember that. That was a pretty confusing process, and you lost a lot of buyers in that process because they just didn't know their login here or whatever. And it was just like, oh, no.
Yeah.
So, yeah, making it easier, though, does make it easier for everybody. You're right. Even the bad actors.
Yeah, I'm just glad that there are people out there thinking about this, right? Because you said it's a tough problem to solve. I don't even know if it's like a solvable problem. There will always be like that back and forth between making things easier and then making it easier for fraud and then back the other way to making it more secure. So like, I get that that's just part of the deal, part of e-commerce, part of commerce in general. So I'm just glad that there are people thinking about that to continue to make things more secure and easier, like back and forth that are doing that dance, you know, and making sure that we're all safe as much as we can be, but also that we're able to buy the things that we want. And in this case, sell the things that we want to sell from our stores to people, knowing that they'll be safe, knowing that they can get where they're trying to go easily. So I'm just thankful that there's someone thinking about that because it's not me, but I'm glad that someone's got my back.
You know, we talked for years now on Do the Woo too, just like, when are things like biometrics and blockchain going to become more integrated into the e-commerce world? And I mean, I fully expect it's going to happen. I'm kind of surprised we're not seeing more of that already. And so I do think that over the next few years, that will be something that we start seeing happening, because the fraud, I mean, if you look at the numbers, fraud numbers are growing rapidly, and especially since pandemic. Oh my gosh. I mean, it's really gotten bad. So we do have to look at new innovative ways to secure these transactions out there.
Yeah. As long as my fingers don't become a target for fraud.
That's right.
Come get my fingers. Funny. Leave my fingers alone.
James Bond movie where they, you know, just chop off their finger.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then the last session that we had right before this one was the magic of conversational commerce, WooCommerce, and WhatsApp exploration. Again, only got to hear about half of that, and I was really interested in it. So I was actually asking Brian before we were going on, I was like, hey, now, how did it end?
Yeah. Our final session for today was Vachan Kudmule, who was showing off conversational commerce and how you could connect your WooCommerce site to a WhatsApp instance, and people could interact with a bot or a real human and have a conversational transaction where they say, I want this. And then the shop says, okay, where do you need it? And then they say, here. And then the shop says, okay, here's how much it is. And they say, okay, here's the money. And the shop says, great. Here's when you can expect the delivery. Really, really neat conceptually. And I think Vachan did a wonderful job of not just saying, here's a thing that exists, but also here's how you can make this thing yourself. Let me walk you through some of these more nuanced steps, because it's a little convoluted, if I'm honest. Well, not really. There's just a lot of different things you have to connect, because you have to connect WhatsApp to your Meta account. You have to connect your WooCommerce site to your Meta account, and so on. So he did a great job.
Yeah. Yeah, I was able to watch a lot of his step-by-step there, and I was impressed with that. I was like, okay, I actually have an idea for that too. So I was like, oh, cool. That was really cool.
It was actually kind of a neat companion piece to yesterday's TikTok integration, because I think there are some similar steps there along the way in connecting your store and syncing products and stuff across. They're not identical, but some similar steps. So watch those back to back and then integrate both of those things into your store. Go ahead and sell on TikTok and WhatsApp.
Yeah, there you go. Run some ads on TikTok that talk about how you can answer any question about any product. I wonder.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, we have reached our time, technically, officially. Is there anything else either of you want to say?
Just thanks again, Brian, for putting on another great WooSesh. And I'm going to be able to now go back and watch the ones that I didn't get to see yesterday. So I'm excited about that, especially since Marcus brought up the TikTok one. I was like, yes, I had that on my list.
Yeah.
So I will be going back to watch those. So thank you very much. And thank you for having us on.
Yeah. Yep. Same for me. Thanks to all the speakers. Thanks to Courtney and Jonathan yesterday representing our Do the Woo family on day one. And yeah, thanks so much to you, Brian. Congrats on the 7th iteration of this. I think it's been absolutely fantastic, just like the others have been. And really appreciate all that you do to make these happen.
Well, I would like to thank our host for repping Do the Woo this year at WooSesh. And to Brian Richards for bringing us yet another amazing conference. Also, thank you, Brian, for letting us share our recaps here with you, our listeners. If you're interested in hearing not only the sessions from this year, you can join WPSessions.com to hear all the years of WooSesh, WordSesh, and WP Sessions has a lot more that can help you build better websites, find better clients, and grow a better business as you learn from industry-leading experts from all over the world. And of course, here, year-round, tune in to Do the Woo as we amplify the voices here for the community and by the community. So until next time.